Hi, Tracy Alcoholic. Happy to be here. I'm going to put on my timer. I will not go over time. Well, I'll try not to go over time. We'll see. And I am the last speaker before your break, so I'll try not to delay your break. I've been given the gift of sobriety since October 4th, 2012. And as I look at everyone in this room, I wish y'all could see my view. A group of beautiful people. And aren't we lucky? Aren't we lucky we get to live two lifetimes in one lifetime? You know, today I get to talk about steps 4 through 7. And just a show of hands, how many of you have completed step 4 and 5 from the big book? Just raise your hand. Got a big number here. That's awesome. For those of you that haven't completed steps 4 and 5 in the big book, hopefully it will help you to relieve any fear that you may have heard about with these steps. And of the group that has completed steps 4 and 5 from the book, how many of you experienced a life-changing event? Raise your hand. Pretty big number. So for those of you who haven't done steps 4 and 5, for me, it was a life-changing event. So we heard this morning about steps 1 through 3 from Jerry. Thank you again, Jerry. And Bill used the word powerless in the first step because he knew our ego needed to be deflated. I don't know if any of you have read the medical view in the back of the book, but I love what it says. It's talking about an interview that was done in the 40s for NBC, and it says, the alcoholic often overcomes his excessive concentration upon himself. Now, when I walked in here, I didn't think I was selfish. I didn't think I had an ego. I really hadn't heard of that term much. But anyway, that's why we become powerless. So we have to admit we're powerless. We have to concede we're powerless, so it has to travel from our head to our heart. That's why in the book, there's 164 pages, but more than 45 pages are devoted to step 1. That's how important it is. And then we read step 2. Now we know we're powerless. We identify a power who can help us, a power greater than me, because I knew I couldn't do it. And then in step 3, making that decision to turn our will and our lives, our words and our actions over to the care of God, and I like the manuscript, over to the care and direction of God as we understand him. I remember taking that step with my sponsor on my knees. I'm a big on your knee person. And it was so beautiful. And she told me I'm only making a decision. All right, I could get right with that. But I had no clue how to do that, how to live God's will, and how to live my life under God's care and direction. So let's talk about why we have to do steps 4 and 5 and all the rest of the steps. But in step 3, I've made a decision. I'm going to turn my life over to the care and direction of my higher power. We learn in the book, in a couple different places, but one specifically, it says, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the Spirit because of my selfishness. And it also says right before that, that we are blocked from God. I can't find it specifically. I had it earlier. But anyway, we're blocked from God. So how the heck am I going to do step 3 and turn my life over to the care of God if I can't hear God's voice? If I can't get God's direction? That's why we have to do step 4 and 5. So that we can clean up what's going on in our head and make room for God's direction. So we have a couple of different places that tells us the timeline for doing step four. So we talked about step three, getting on our knees. I got on my knees with my sponsor, and then it says at the bottom of page 63, this was only a beginning. Though if honestly and humbly made an effort, sometimes a very great one was felt at once. Then it gives us a timeline. When do I do step four? Next, we launched out in a course of vigorous action. Launched means initiate, put in movement. And then the course of vigorous, vigorous means full of energy and effort. So we go from step three to step four next. That's the first timeline. And then it says the first step of which is personal housekeeping, which many of us had never attempted. I never even thought of it before in my life. And then it says, though our decision was vital, vital means necessary to life. Vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once, there's the other timeline, at once, followed by strenuous. Strenuous means great effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. So why would we delay from step three to step four? I remember early in my sobriety being in the rooms and hearing about how afraid people were about step four and five. I can't be afraid if I truly made the decision in step three. Or as I have in the margin of my book in several places, do it scared. Just do it. And then I was also told another reason that I'm doing step four and five is back on page 27, and it's in There Is a Solution. And it is Carl Jung, a psychiatrist, and Roland Hazard. And they're having a conversation, and Carl Jung says, here and there, once in a while, alcoholics have had what are called vital, necessary to life, spiritual experiences. We read the steps. And the reason that we do the steps is that spiritual awakening or spiritual experience. And it says, they appear to be in the nature of huge emotional displacements and rearrangements, ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the guiding forces of the lives of these men, are suddenly cast to one side, and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begins to dominate them. So we get rid of our ideas and emotions that I use to drive my life for a number of years, and it's replaced with a new set of conceptions and motives. And you haven't, if you haven't noticed, Bill's writing, he likes to say the same thing using different words. And he does that because he was told that he would sound smarter. So oftentimes we'll have different words to say the same thing all throughout the writing. And so we're here, we work the steps because we need a new way of running our life. We need help in our lives. And the promise of the steps is that spiritual awakening, spiritual experience. And if you go to the appendix in the back of the book talking about the spiritual experience, now Bill wrote this to clarify the spiritual experience, the spiritual awakening. Often people thought, like he did in the hospital, he'd have the burning bush, the white light come to him. And the fact is that a majority of alcoholics don't have that white light, burning bush. The spiritual experience comes to them slowly through working the steps. But it says in the appendix, we have a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery. It also says a vast change in feeling and outlook, a profound alteration in his reaction to life. And on the end of it, it says, willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery. But these are indispensable. Indispensable means absolutely necessary. So we continue to be willing, honest, and open. And it continues after the steps. We heard the set-aside prayer this morning. We have to be open, remain teachable, and learning. So the spiritual experience is a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery. I'm not the person now that came into Alcoholics Anonymous. Because of God's grace, because of working the steps, taking the action, I am a different person. A personality change. The book says it in so many different ways. A new outlook, a new perspective, a new attitude. We are reborn. Thank God, reborn. Because I didn't want to be reborn into my old life. That was not a good life. We get reborn into a better life. Humility is behind every step in this book. That's why I'm a big proponent of getting on my knees with women that I'm working with and in my own prayer life, because that simple act helps to remind my ego that God is my driving force in my life today. Humility is behind every one of these steps, and what humility is the fact that we are all one. We're all connected. I'm no better, no worse than anybody here. We are all sober today by God's grace. So humility is behind every one of these steps. So we learned, you know, we made this decision to turn our will and our life over the care of God. I am filled with thoughts in my head. So I go through step four to help me to get a new set of conceptions and ideas. So it says, we got the timeline clear. We're next. We're going to do it next or at once. I remember the last time I did the steps. I do the steps about every year or two with my sponsor. And he said, Trace, you can start step four next or at once. That's your choice. And so I got the message pretty clear. So on page 64, it says, therefore, we started on a personal inventory. This was step four. Now, Bill's other writing technique that he uses is he tries to compare something that we may know to what we're going to do. In this particular case, he's saying a business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory, same thing, an inventory is a fact-finding, fact-facing process. In an effort to discover the truth about the stock and trade, one object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. So we're running our business. If I'm running I like the idea of running a clothing store, I have to take inventory. I have to see what I have, and I have to see those items that are not selling, those items that are damaged. And I have to get rid of those items so I can put in things that are selling. So Bill's comparing that business inventory to what I am going to do in step four. I'm going to identify those items that are damaged and unsaleable, those items I need to get rid of. Now, my sick mind cannot heal my sick mind. This has to be a prayerful exercise because I need God's help. I need God's help to identify those unsaleable goods, those character defects. I need a person to talk to that can speak for God to me for me to see those unsaleable goods. That's why I have to speak it to somebody else. So we continue on with our inventory, and it says we did the same exact thing with our lives. And then it continues and says the resentment is the number one offender. Resentment means re-feel. So I don't know about you guys, but I have a replay machine in my head, just kind of like if you're watching a football game and there's a play and they replay it over and over. And each time you see something else in that replay. I do that with my resentments. I replay them in my head. I replay them over and over and over again, and each time I see a little bit more, which in my case is me doing a little bit less and them doing a little bit more to hurt me. You guys are supposed to laugh at some of these things, and you're not laughing this morning. All right. In my practice, you were laughing. But anyway, it destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From its stem, all forms of spiritual disease. We've been not only mentally and physically ill, we've been spiritually sick. When a spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. So all of those different phrases, spiritual disease, spiritual malady, spiritually sick, when I came into the rooms, I heard soul sickness. And I related to that because I came into AA with an emptiness that I didn't know what it was. And it felt like my soul was sick. So whatever you want to call it, spiritual disease, spiritual malady, but we come in with this disease, the spiritual malady. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. I am a big book thumper, I will admit. And I do make the women that I work with, and I've done it this way, set them on paper. There's something therapeutic about pen to paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. So we follow the precise directions from the book. We list all the people that we have a resentment with, fancied or real. And then we list the institutions, those buildings or brick and mortar places that we have a resentment with. And then we list principles. Generally, they're laws. For me, I remember a big one was the TSA. I really was annoyed by the TSA because they always delayed me in the airport. So you list whatever principles they are or whatever has made you angry. And then you go through the columns as outlined in the book, why you were angry, what it affected. And then you get to the column, if you go to page 67, for those of you guys who have your book, it reminds us again that a life that includes resentment leads to futility, which is uselessness, and unhappiness. And this is what I meant to cover early. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? Squander means waste. It means useless. And I thought about how many hours I've spent thinking about these resentments. How many hours I've squandered that could have been done doing something a lot more productive. And then it says, but the alcoholic whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, the business of resentment is infinitely grave. Okay, there's one time to say die. We found that it is fatal. Here goes Bill, a different word, die. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit, the insanity of alcohol returns, and we drink again, and with us to drink is to die. That's like three sentences he said die three different ways. Are resentments a problem? Hello. If we are to live, we had to be free of anger. And then it goes on. So then I'm going through and I'm listing my columns. And again, this is a prayerful exercise with God. I can't do it alone. I need God to help me remember these resentments. Help me to remember what occurred to make me so resentful. And I don't know about you guys, but as an alcoholic, I'm really good at pushing things down. I'm really good at not feeling things. So I need God to give me the help. And working with others, it's such a fine balance on allowing them enough time. Because you have to be thorough in this step. You have to be thorough and honest. I've been in the rooms a number of times where people come in and they've relapsed because they held something back. So in working with women, it has to be a prayerful exercise. They have to have enough time to be thorough and honest, but you can't let them procrastinate. And it's a hard balance. But the sooner they get it done, the sooner they will have relief in their life. The first time I got through steps 4 and 5, was the first time I experienced a glimpse of peace and joy in my life. So we go to the last column, and it says, referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done. That was a hard thing. We resolutely look for our mistakes. So when I work with women, and this is how I've done it, that column is called My Blame. This is my inventory, no one else's. I'm not looking for anything anyone did, I'm looking for what I did. And then we identify where have I been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. And that was hard to see. But the book talks about, as we go through this process, can you see how we got the ball rolling? How we got the ball rolling so that this person ended up hurting us, and then we get mad at them. I couldn't see that in any other way. And even as I was going through my step five with my sponsor, I needed her help to guide me in some of these things because I just couldn't see it. And then we move into the second inventory, the fear inventory. And it says, it gives the example on page 65, but it says that short word fear somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. Corroding means eat from the inside out. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we thought we felt we didn't deserve. So the first time I attempted my fear inventory, I started out with the fact that I was afraid of spiders and bugs and snakes. And thankfully, my sponsor set me straight. These fears are not things that I talk about. These are fears that I think. And they drive me to do things to hurt other people. So they're fears like, what is that person going to think of me? Well, the people pleaser at heart. Are they going to think I'm smart? Are they going to like me? Am I enough? Never in my life I said that to somebody. And then I learned that it's driving so much in my life. So we go through the fears and do that inventory. And then we're introduced to the forgiveness prayer on the top of page 67. The forgiveness prayer. For many years, I called it the sick man's prayer, but it's the forgiveness prayer. And it says, when a person offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done. I love that prayer. I continue to use it frequently. And there was a story in the back of the book that talked about a person getting through the resentments and getting through forgiveness. And it suggested reading that forgiveness prayer for 2 weeks. And while it's not in the first 164 pages, I did that for many people on my resentment list. Forgiveness sets me free. Forgiveness doesn't condone anything that was done. Forgiveness sets me free and frees up my mind. So I don't have to think about other people. I don't have to be dominated by other people or think they did something wrong. Forgiveness is critical. So today I say this prayer. My mind today is not occupied with being mad at somebody or thinking somebody was out to hurt me. The book talks about these resentments being fancy or real. Before, you could have a look on your face and I would think that you did something wrong. I knew what you were thinking. But thankfully, through learning this, these steps, I don't have to live that way anymore. I can live and let live, and I can trust God. So the forgiveness prayer is an awesome prayer, and forgiveness is key to my freedom today. And then we get into the third inventory, which is the sex inventory or harms done. harm's done to others, and we live with this guilt and remorse that we just can't get over. And I got sober in Dallas, and we just called it the sex inventory, but I've learned down here, being here for 5 years, that you guys call the harm's done, at least where I've been. But at any rate, we talk about the sex inventory in true, I think, bill form on page 69. And then we look for our own conduct over the years. Where had I been selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate? Words I never used before. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. Whom had I hurt? Did I unjustifiably arouse jealousy? Suspicion or bitterness? Where was I at fault? Again, looking at what I did to get the ball rolling. And then it adds, what should I have done instead? Well, that's a new perspective right there. What should I have done instead? The opposite of what I did. And so it's pretty clear. So we continue on doing that prayerful exercise of step four, identifying the three columns, making sure that we include God, that we are thorough and honest. Because as we heard in just three paragraphs, for us to drink is to die. If we're not thorough and honest, we will die, and whatever else way that Bill sent it. And then we go into step five, and I think this is really where the fear exists. Now, let's be honest. We're in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. How many of you, Blaine's already raising his hand, how many of you were truly, or let's say, even a little afraid of step five? The first time you did it, come on, be honest. And this is where in the margin I have, do it scared. It's a process, especially the first time. You know, after the first time, you know, each time you become excited to do it. But especially the first time. It's a life-changing event. And Bill in the first 100 wrote this book, not to mention millions since this book has been written, to prove that it's a life-changing event, to prove that it has to be done thoroughly. So we get into step five, and it's on chapter six, into action. It is not called into thinking, it is called into action. And it says, why are we doing it? Why are we doing step five? Other than to live, you know, that's the one reason. We've been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. So my experience when I went through this the first time, you know, it takes what it takes. It had to be several hours. But it really opened my eyes up to a new perspective on life. Humility is part of every step. And as I said these things to my sponsor that I thought were awful, she's like, yeah, I did that. You know, whatever the case might be, but we've all experienced that. It's never, never as bad as we think. Because in our own minds, we are pretty unique and special, when in fact, we have to have humility. We are all one, we are all connected, we're all the same. And then I'm reminded as I do this step two that on page 53, it says, God either is or he isn't. What is my choice to be? I made that decision in step three. And then we have the fifth step promises, which are on page 75. There are promises after each step. So the fifth step promises, it says, we pocket our pride and go for it. Really focusing on that column of where was I to blame. Illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step withholding nothing, we are delighted. Delighted. That was not an adjective I use to describe my life. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. And the biggest promise, we may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. We began that process of a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery. We get new perceptions and ideas about life. We get a new attitude. It's the first time in my life I felt some relief. I'd had a little bit of hope at the beginning, but my hope gets strengthened as I go through this step. And then we get it to step six. Top of page 76. It's one paragraph that by no means minimizes its importance. Step six is still just as important as any other step. They're just very direct in the directions for step six. But this is after I follow the directions on the bottom of page 75. I spend 1 hour with God. 1 hour. Not 55 minutes, not an hour and a half. 1 hour with God. And I go through the first proposals or steps. Bill saying another word again. But I go through the first 5 steps. And I get with God to help me see his truth. God help me see so that I can feel 100% certain that I am thorough. And make sure you haven't omitted anything. So after taking that hour, it has construction metaphors. So we have to ask ourselves if we built the foundation out of a strong foundation. We don't want a weak foundation. Again, they're using construction metaphors because on this foundation is where we're building the archway where we can walk free. Free for the first time, I know, in my life. So we ask ourselves these questions, and then you get with your sponsor the next day and you get to step six and it says, if we can answer those questions to our satisfaction, then we get to look at step six. Here we go. We've emphasized willingness. Willingness again. They talked about in the spiritual experience, willingness, open-mindedness, and honesty. We've emphasized willingness as being indispensable, absolutely necessary. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we've admitted are objectionable? All those things in our inventory that we identified, our character defects, that certainly are objectionable. Are we willing to have God take them? Can he take them all, every one? Well, at this point in the steps, you'd think that I was willing, but I wasn't. I had some of those characteristics, I thought, that built my character, that helped me get to where I got in my life, in my career, and I was not willing to let every one of them go. There were some I wanted to hang on to. And then the step tells you, if you still cling to something, we will not let go. I can laugh at things I thought of for sure. We ask God to help us be willing. I had to go through that process. I had to ask God to help me be willing to get rid of this crap. And it was through that process, maybe it took about 10 days, where I became totally willing to let go of all those objectionable items. And then in step seven, it's the next paragraph. When ready, we say something like this. And I remember the first time going through this with my sponsor. And whenever I feel God's presence, I always get tears in my eyes. So tears are coming. My Creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. God, you can take anything, good or bad, if it stands in the way of my usefulness to you or my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. So this book tells us pretty early in the book, I think it's on page 17, that this is a design for living in the rough going. I know about you all, but I didn't even know how to live life sober, let alone live a life sober where I could be happy, joyous, and free. But be careful. You know, at this point, you're now responsible for your actions, your words, and your behavior. At this point, I can no longer blame my boss, my friends, my parents, or whomever for my thoughts or my behavior. I am now responsible for what I do. So God can do for us what we cannot do for ourselves. All of us are perfect examples here in this room. But God will not do for us what we can do for ourselves. So we identified in our inventory, what should I have done better? I know I'm selfish. So we need to be aware that we're selfish, and how do I do the opposite? How do I be unselfish? I have to be considerate of other people, help other people, rather than be dishonest, which was my old way of life. Now I need to be honest. And it's amazing to me that when I practice the opposite, I consciously practice the opposite, my life gets better. People kind of like me sometimes. People want me around sometimes when I practice the opposite. And then ultimately, why we're here is on the top of page 77, and it says, our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. Aren't we lucky? Aren't we lucky we get to live two lifetimes in one lifetime? So many people in this world are sick. And they don't know what's wrong with them, and they die sick. We get to learn that we're sick, and then we get a book to tell us what to do so that we are recovered. We get the answer to our sickness. And in return, God gives us a life where we can be happy, joyous, and free. I'm trying not to swear. So thank you everyone so far for being here.